Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding, Ken's Movie Reviews. Are we beyond that? We might be beyond that. I'll still call it Ken's Movie Reviews. And this is, of course, not Ken. Coming to you with a standalone movie review of a movie that's been out for just a bit in the theaters. Since we're a little short on comic book material that we normally do, why don't we go a little bit on the lighter side and give ourselves a little flair of that children's magic, or so it seems, or so it seems. We are talking, of course, about a review of Inside Out 2. Now, here's a little background I'll give you on this, right? I've got some younger kids, and of course, when the original Inside Out was released, it was my daughter's favorite movie at the time, and still to this day remains one of her favorite movies. And now we're on to Inside Out 2, and there was an interest to go and watch it as a family group. So, of course, we all went to watch it at the theater. And I can tell you, we went to see it a week after it had been released. And we went to the theater on Friday night, I do believe. And we were in one of the smaller theaters, not the biggest, not the smallest. They generally bump you after the first week, right? But I'm telling you, this theater was, I don't know, I want to say 75% full, 80% full, and the audience in there was little to no kids. There was a lot of teenagers, like older, like we're talking like high school teenagers, young college age teenagers, 20-some-year-olds, 30, 40-year-olds, like a good broad age range of people, but there were not very many kids in this theater. So I think what's happened is this particular release has drawn a lot more of the general audience as opposed to the kids' audience. So cool, there's been a little stretch where some of the Disney and Pixar releases haven't really drawn the crowds. But this one so far looks like it's doing that. Now, when we watched the original Inside Out, that was really geared towards young kids, right? But the main character was a young kid and going through all of those emotions that a young kid can go through. But now we've seen in this particular movie that the young kid has grown up, and now we have like a preteen or a early teen, and the vibe fits, and I think the audience kind of matched that. And that's what we're seeing with this particular movie. So if you haven't seen this movie yet, we always try to throw out a little spoiler-free review for just a minute or two. And then we get down to the nitty-gritty of our fun extra scientific scoring model. Now, spoiler-free, is this a movie that you should take your family to? It's one of the, from a Pixar standpoint, it's what you get, right? Like, good story, good visuals, a fun attitude. There's some adult meaning, there's some kids meaning, and everything in between. I feel like if you enjoyed the first one, and you kind of get the behind-the-scenes messaging of that first one, that you'll also enjoy this one as well. If you've got a child, it's not a child anymore, that's a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, and you do enjoy the family movie setting at all, I really think you guys would enjoy this one too. There's really no antagonist in this movie. It's just a wave of feeling, emotions, growing up, and things that happen to kids when they grow up, or when they hit that magic time frame of, things changing in their lives and things changing in their body. So There's the spoiler free with that. Is it worth going to the theater? I think it's worth going in a family setting for sure. Are you gonna miss anything crazy if you don't go to the theater? Nah. Is it worth watching on streaming if you get the old Disney Plus at home? Yeah, it's a fun watch for sure. Okay, so now we got to get down to the actual nitty-gritty of the scoring system for this movie. And of course, we base our scoring system off a grand total of 100 points, broken down by individual categories. So the maximum you can get is 100. Of course, the minimum you could get would be 0. I know I've had a 40s before. We've had some low scores, but we haven't dipped down to like the 10s or the 20s yet. But we also not had 100 on a movie either. So usually we just go down the list and we make a random choice as to which of the categories to start with. And you know what? I'm gonna go right back to our old school method. I've got it listed here and how we would normally do our scoring system. So I'm gonna start with the cast first. And the cast gets a lot of points, right? It's a 20-point scale. And there's a lot of weight placed on the cast now, especially in an animated movie, right? So when you see the faces on the screen, there's a lot going on, movements and how you're perceived and the way things look and the makeup and everything that goes into us. But with this one, you got to convey that emotion. You got to convey that emotion through nothing but your voice. And for the most part, the voice actors that were in the first show returned for the second one. Of course, there's some glaring omissions, but the quote main character, I guess you could say, in the movie, if you're looking at the different set of the emotions, was Joy, and that was Amy Poehler. And Amy Poehler was in the first one, she was in the second one, and so you get a lot of her voice. And then let's backtrack here and just like go with the standard ones. If we go back to the original Inside Out, right, there was just a select few of the emotions. Joy, fear, Bill Hader showed up in the first one, anger, Lewis Black, disgust, Mindy Kaling, sadness, Phyllis Smith. You know, there was just that core group. And like I said, for the most part, those core group came back with some omissions. You know, Bill Hader's not in it this time around. Mindy Kaling's not in it this time around. So there were definitely some changes, and things are fine. Although I just felt in this cast, I felt my brain trying to remember what people sounded like in the first movie. And when I'm watching this, the Amy Poehler that I got didn't match the Amy Poehler that I got the first time around, is what my brain's trying to remember for me. And I haven't seen the first one in a while, but I felt we're missing something. You know, Lewis Black's gotten a little older. And his fire and his emotion, I just didn't get it as much in this one. And the problem is, I know who Lewis Black is outside of this, and I've seen the first one. So if I want to compare what I got with the first one, that drives everybody down a notch. But if I take this as it is, as a standalone, everybody did pretty good, right? So like there's a difference. I had an expectation for what these people should sound like and the emotion they could convey based on the first one. So I'm skewed a little bit, but I try to, you know, make my brain parts work to offset that a little bit. But instead for this one, we had Lisa Lapira for Disgust and Tony Hale as Fear. So there was definitely some changes, right? But we show some new faces pop up, right? We have anxiety this time around, which I guess you could say is I don't want to call anxiety the antagonist, because that's not it. the whole movie revolves around getting older and feeling new emotions. And sometimes those emotions take over. And that's what you get in this movie, is that those other emotions started to take over. When you're 5 and 6 and 7, joy is going to be one of those emotions. But as you get older and things change, you know, anxiety is a real deal thing, and it can take over your mind and your body. So to have it kind of take over in this one, it made complete sense. And Maya Hawke was fine. There was a lot of focus on the real world setting as opposed to the emotional world setting. And we got the real life actresses, people conveying scenes. Now, it was based around her going to, you know, getting older. She had friends. She made these two core friends. They play hockey together, which is cool on its own. You know, congratulations. Let's have hockey stuff. I love me some hockey. Hockey stuff, friends, go to a hockey camp, things happen. That's what we're talking about. So we're like, there's a lot of real world situations, and you got to put the emotions in check or in play based on these real world situations. But we're focusing on the cast right here. A wide variety of faces. Kensington Tallman. I don't know who that is. Sorry. Ayo Edebiri. Lilimar is Valentina. There's a single name in there. Grace Liu is Grace. Interesting. So there's just a lot of faces in here, a lot of names that I'm just not familiar with. So good on them for bringing in some fresh faces here. But everybody played their character very well. When looking at the cast as a whole, you got some highlights. Diane Lane is mom. Kyle MacLachlan is dad. You know, I love that. Yvette Nicole Brown as Coach Roberts. Some of these voices you recognize and you're like, what am I thinking here? June Squibb as Nostalgia, who just shows up from time to time. Awesome. And you recognize them. And then when you're like, who is that? And you go on your phone after the movie and you're like, yes. And the big one for me, there's a character that pops up by the name of Bloofy. Now, Bloofy is like a cartoon character. It's stuck in her mind, but Bloofy gets locked away in like the deep, dark secret part of the brain and makes an appearance. Now, Bloofy is just a cartoon character presented in cartoon character form other than, you know, Disney animation form and sort of Pixar form. So that part itself was cool, but it was played by Ron Funches. And if you don't know who Ron Funches is, he does a lot of voices. You see his face from time to time in live action as well, but he does a lot of voices. And I'm listening to this and I'm like, what am I listening to here? I'm like, oh my gosh, that's King Shark. And he does the voice for King Shark in the Harley Quinn show on Max, which if you haven't seen that, it's top notch, by the way. But the Ron Funches one, I was like, oh my gosh, what am I listening? Why do I know that sound of that voice? It's King Shark. So I thought that was pretty cool. Overall, when I look at the score for the cast, like I said, I'm trying not to just go all in and say that some of the things fell short of my expectations because of the first one. I'm trying to be professional about it, so I could have had this score lower, I really think, but I gave it a solid 16 out of 20. Okay, next category, we're going to go with director. Now, I looked a little bit at the director. The director for this movie is Kelsey Mann. What can you, the listener, tell me about Kelsey Mann? Nothing? Interesting. So Kelsey Mann really hasn't directed anything. If I go through the credits, there's some writing credits, which Kelsey was a writer in Inside Out 2. Congratulations, that makes sense. But really showed up in the animation department for a few things. Monsters University, Star Wars, Clone Wars. Participated in the Lightyear movie, Elemental movie. So Kelsey's shown up in bits and pieces here, but from a directing credits, we've had some things. If you remember Party Central, I don't remember it either. Green Screen Show was a co-director. Yeah, I don't remember that either. Megas XLR. Yeah, I don't know so much about that. So let's just say that this is the big break here. And from a directing standpoint, I honestly think this went really well. The pacing on it was fine. It's a kid's movie. You don't want this movie to take 2 hours long, but, you know, give us some info. Don't put it in at an hour long either. So I like the back and forth between the real world and the brain world with the emotions. I like the treks that had to be made to, you know, there's always that MacGuffin of sorts in a lot of these movies. Like I said, there wasn't a true antagonist in this, so it was more trying to get a thing, and once they got the thing, they realized they didn't need the thing type of thing. So that's a hard, like, you're battling against yourself, quite literally in this movie. You're battling against yourself, right? You're battling your emotions. So there is conflict, although I don't find that there was a particular conflict, like a main conflict. There was a story that was driving it, but it was all I'll get to it with the plot, but to deliver us a story where there really isn't an antagonist. There's just a story about things that happen and how you can overcome those things that happen, with a little hint of MacGuffin thrown in there. Good. You know, trying to get the best of what you can out of the voices with voice actors that are older now, with substitutes, with new voices. Of course, a lot of this is developed. They come to a stage. They just do their work for, you know, 10 hours and get paid a lot of money, and then they're out. And then they come back months later, maybe a year later, and do more work for a day, get paid again, and they're out. It's the best way if you're a star to make a, you know, make that paycheck without having to really spend months working. It's an awesome gig. And to develop that relationship and to direct those pieces in a meaningful way and then put it on screen, is always a difficult task, but I thought it was delivered excellently. Is that a thing? It was well developed in this. So you got a lot of character changes in a short time. This character goes through all of the ins and outs of emotion, and it shows and it changes, and you're just like, the realization of things changes, but it all happens in like a 3-day window. It's crazy how you can do that turnaround, but it was presented in a way that for the most part made sense. Colors were nice. The sound was nice. So you got to put those pieces together from a directing standpoint. And I really think they did well in this. So this is probably a way too high score, but I gave the director a 13 on this category, which for a director score is actually pretty substantial. Okay, on to the next one. So when we typically do a movie review and we say locations, right? So it's easy. If you look at a Bond movie and you're in the mountains and you're driving through the mountains and there's these grand landscapes of rock and snow and rain and ice, and like, things look amazing. You have this landscape. Great. Well, how do you deliver that in an animated movie? And we're not talking about anime, right? Where maybe there's more detail. We're talking about an animated movie, a Disney movie, a Pixar movie. How do you deliver those locations and have them be meaningful? And in this particular scenario, too, you got to imagine one thing. A lot of these places are the brain. They're imaginary. And there's some that are real. So when we look at these locations, they gave us driving in a car. They gave us a hockey rink. And they gave us a hockey place and locker room and a dorm. And that's about it, right? So a lot of the real world stuff, although there was good chunks of it, they were delivered in tiny little areas. Did it look like a practice hockey rink? Yeah, it did. Did it look like a gym, like a locker room? Yes. Did it look like a dorm? Yes. Very good. Okay, so let's focus more on the locations from the emotion standpoint, right? There was the control center. That looked pretty spot on, right? I had no problems with that. Then there was, like, if you look out the windows, and this had more, I think, importance in the first movie, there was the different centers, right? The things that had importance. And those centers had these detailed, it was like a little city within a city off on an island. And they had their own little details. We didn't really go through a lot of that. We went down to we took an elevator down to the depths that showed the building blocks of what made that person who they were. Okay, well, there was water and there was strings that were going up. Okay, cool. We showed the memory cache, right? So it's basically a library stacked with all the memories. And there was a lot of those. And that part was cool, too. But there wasn't much to see. Okay, so when Joy tried to get rid of memories, they shot him way off in the distance. So you go way off in the distance, and it's just, you know, there's a land that's out there. And it all looks nice, but like nothing that stood out as like, oh, that looks weird, or nothing that stood out as, okay, well, you need a little bit more work on this. So there were enough locations, but it wasn't like this was some grand landscape of things. So we're not going to go too deep on this one. And we're going to say locations was a 7, right? Nothing too special, nothing too crazy. Okay, next one. It's the combined one, right? Costume and props. Well, okay, so what do we do on these animated things where there are no true costumes and no true props developed? They're all drawn, right? Okay, so each character has their own look and feel, which makes them unique, right? So each character had their own face. Each character had their own outfit. Each character had their own set of individual things. And everybody looked good. The color looked good. There was one character who, the shyness, right? The shyness of that character. And it's not shyness. That's not what it is. But anyway, the big thing with that character was it was a big character and, embarrassment, sorry. Played by Paul Walter Hauser, had a hoodie. And every time, you know, something happened, he would scrunch up the hoodie, and all you'd see was the big nose sticking out of the hood of the hoodie. Little segments like that were funny, right? But they played into that whole aspect of the costume and the prop for that character. Nostalgia showed up just a couple times in there. And the nostalgia character looked fantastic, right? It one of the funny little highlights that popped up. But the look and feel of that character made sense. Okay, so what types of, you know, props were there? So there was hockey stuff. There was lots of hockey gear. I appreciated that once again. You know, hooray for doing more hockey content. Love to see that. Florida Panthers, anyone? Anyway, okay. The hockey rink looked fun. The skates, the equipment, the headgear, the sticks, the puck, you know, there was some effort put forth to make that stuff look fun and real in a cartoon setup. So props, kudos to that. When they're traversing the mind, if you will, and we have all the different memories and they're all the different globes of different color. Cool. But the means of going from place to place, you know, there's the river that they went down and they were floating on, you know, whatever they were craving at the time or whatever they were thinking about, broccoli, for example. That stuff all made sense. So everything I felt was good, not out of place, not too crazy, good colors, good drawing, good artwork, but nothing that stood out. I just, like I said, appreciated the hockey stuff because me likes hockey. So instead of doing a base 7, we'll come in with a score of 8 for the props. All right, so there's a couple more categories here. We're going to move on to cinematography. So cinematography in this one is a kind of the process of the colors, the look, the feel, the pop. If someone's running, does it look like they're running? If their action sequences, does it look like the action sequences make sense? So the cinematography, I kind of gave this a meh score just because I want, as great as the colors and the imagination were in this, I felt like it could have been more. As great as the colors were the what the colors should have been, not what they could have been, if that makes sense. From the look and the feel of how everything came together, the running and the action sequences were fine, right? What are you going to do as the characters fall off a thing or go through a thing to make it seem more action-y or less derived, more smooth? What were the cuts in this one? And everything was fine, right? I just feel like even doing the hockey stuff was fine. That's the word that I can describe it. And if you've listened to some of my reviews before, when I say fine, you kind of get an idea where the score is going to go on this. What I wanted out of this one was more color. And if you watch this movie, you're like, well, wait a second, everybody had their own color. And I get that. I understand that. I just felt like the first one was more vibrant, right? There was more life to it. And I just didn't get that same feeling from this one. I felt like what we got from the sequences was they were put together as they should be, not how they could be. And that's hard to describe. But I wanted more. It's hard. It's, you know, on these sequels, you don't often have a sequel that is just builds on the first and makes it even better. And it's hard to do that in any world, but for this one, there was a few things that just weren't in place, and the cinematography for me was one of the things that was just kind of meh. So on this one, we'll give a score of 10. 10, that's actually based out of 15, if I'm not mistaken. So, okay, score. So the score is the music, the music. This one's pretty easy to describe as it was fine, right? We know what we're looking at on this one. I don't really remember anything from this movie. And now, when I say that, that's kind of good and bad. And the reason that it's bad is that there's nothing in it that's that memorable that's like, man, I really liked that song. But from the same token, is if I remembered something that was bad or annoying, that's not good either. So in this one, I think what we got was a music that was the appropriate music in the places that it needed to be. It conveyed sadness. It conveyed excitement. It conveyed, you know, worry. It conveyed silliness, and that's what you want out of the music that you're listening to. You don't want it to be distracting, but you want to give it that sense of something is happening. If you've ever played Fallout 4, the score in that game is phenomenal. You can just go to the classic one. You can do no radio station on your Pip-Boy, and it's delivering to you a music score as you walk through the wasteland. And then you encounter something, the music changes according to the encounter that you have. It's phenomenal. It's great. That's what a score should be. And in this one, you get stuff that is good and it fits and it conveys an emotion, but, you know, nothing that really stood out. So in this one, I'm going to have to give it a 7 out of 10. Last one. Okay. So the last one is always the make or break, right? It's the make or break. Do you know what the last category is? It's the plot. Now, this one is always the thing. So like you have a good score going into it, but you get to the plot, the dumps. You have an okay score and you get to the plot, you can prop it back up. And in this one, because it's weighted, it's 20 points. So there's a lot going on for the plot. But the plot in this one, like I said, there's no real antagonist, right? There's just a situation with a MacGuffin. Okay. So the main character in this, once again, based on the first one, has grown up now, made new relationships, has friends, is coming into her own life. And you see a little bit of that. You see the friends. You get a little bit of that established where she made some friends in school. She made choices in school to be a good person. That was kind of the basis of this too. Like some of the things that she went through those formative years were the basis for her. Remember I said they go to the basement. It shows there's a river. It shows them build the building blocks of the person that they are. I am a good person was the thing. And then it was really funny because there was this key point in there where there's the control board change. So like all of the construction crew comes in and there's bashing and they're smashing and they're saying like, hey, it's time for a redesign. And then like, did you meet the new people? Like what new people? What are you talking about? And, the control board gets designed and there's a button that shows up on there and it goes crazy. It starts flashing and nobody knows what to do because they've never seen this button before. And the button is like puberty and just like, oh, right. So that makes sense. Like things are changing in the body. So like hormones kick in, your mindset changes on things. You're learning new things and it was an incredible sequence in it when like those base emotions didn't know what to do because puberty has lit up and there was a siren going off. And to me, that was like, oh, that's funny. That's spot on. So then you're introduced to these other emotions, right? Like anxiety, ennui is in there. There's a certain context to this movie that to me, it made sense. And as a dude, I can't necessarily see the context of what it is like to grow up as a young girl. I don't know that relationship. I had a sister growing up, right? The only thing I can relate to it now is I have a daughter who's young and who is 13, which just matches everything that we're seeing in this movie and how things change. And like, there's just this switch that hits. So the plot of the movie kind of clicked more for me. This is set around a hockey camp and she has friends. She's established this friendship. And as they're on the way to the hockey camp, the friends tell her, when we go to the next level of school, we are going to a different school than what you are going to. And we're talking like, besides anxiety, there's all these other things that are happening that are taking over her mind and her body. And when she goes to the camp, one of the people that she wants to meet, who is like the captain of the hockey team at the high school, is going to be at this camp. So it's a big deal for her. And now that she knows that her friends aren't going to be with her anymore because they're going to a different high school, she's conflicted now because she's trying to think, well, if I'm not going to spend time with them, I've got to develop new relationships. But wait a second, these are my best friends. Just because if they were truly my best friends, just because they're going to a different school doesn't mean we can't be friends anymore. This might be the last time that I can really spend a lot of time with them to develop our bond so that when we go a different direction, that we remain as good of friends as we are now. But what about the conflict of trying to fit in with this group? She's a good hockey player. She wants to fit in. She wants to make the team. She wants to be able to set herself up for success. Anxiety, right? Like this is a real deal thing that kids have to deal with. And the parents aren't here. The parents drop the kid off because remember, it's a hockey camp. So the parents aren't there. It's the kid dealing with these things on their own. Internalizing things, externalizing things, like going to different emotions, but taking those emotions and letting them take over. There was the breaking point in the movie where she had a breakdown. She had an anxiety breakdown, which is a real thing. It can happen to anybody in any age group, any time of the day. You know, like sometimes it can be a major issue. Sometimes it can be a minor issue that your brain chemically is not capable of dealing with what the situation is happening. And the fact that they put this in the context of a hockey camp with girls trying to like set themselves up for success, establish new relationships. It's like the plot to my scenario. Of course, there's little plot holes here and there, but the base concept of the plot to me was like, it just hit me more because of the age group of my kids. So everything I'm seeing in this like made a lot of sense to me. Some of the cheesiness, so like what Joy did to eliminate some of the bad memories, because remember, she's a good person. The main character is a good person. What Joy would do would take the bad memories and she'd set up this little tube and she'd put the memories in the tube and it'd suck the bad memories away and it'd shoot them way off in the distance. Well, when anxiety showed up, she took the I'm a good person and put it in that tube and got rid of it. And she's like, I'm going to develop the new me, right? The new person. And that new person was based off of decisions that were made at this camp. Decisions that, you know, obviously could lead further on through life, but it was like making choices, ignoring the friends, choosing not to be with the friends. You know, at the end, it's about, towards the end of the camp, it's about choosing a team, right? And she, instead of choosing to be on the team with her two friends, she chose to be on the team with the captain because she was like, if I'm going to be on this team, I got to look good for the captain so that they will accept me for who I am and they'll accept me as a good hockey player. It was, you know, everything just made sense. So the whole MacGuffin thing is Joy and the squad going to track down this I'm a good person trait. And then once they bring it back, they kind of just discover that I'm a good person is a base quality, but it's not the whole quality. And the end of it is everything that you do as a life experience, good, bad, or otherwise, builds who you are as a person. And I just think it was delivered like very well. Like I said, I gave the director good props on this one. But in terms of the plot itself, which could be, like I said, a deal breaker, instead of, you know, it's based out of 20, I gave it a 15. And if you know our reviews, 15 is actually a good score for the plot. I gave The Big Short a 15, if that puts you anywhere. Dune 2, I gave it a 17. So 15 is a good score for a plot in the movies that we review. Okay, so in summary, what does that lead for everybody for our Inside Out 2 score? That's a solid 78 for the score, which is a C+. Once again, that's good. That's above average. There were some things I thought could have been better to bump that up to a B. Some of the voice acting could have been a bit sharper. And some of the colors could have been more vibrant and popped and give me a little bit more of what the that magic that we had from that first movie with that, with the voice acting and like just the vibrancy of that movie. And that could have bumped it up to, you know, an 80 plus, but a 78 is still a fair score. So, putting people, have you gone to watch Inside Out 2 yourselves? What was the score that you gave it? Can you identify with what's going on in this movie? Like, does it make sense to you? Or are you just like, I love Pixar movies and I want to go watch this? And this has been one of the better ones that have been out for that studio in a while. Hey, let us know. Give us some feedback. We've got, some channels at which to communicate. There's X, there's our Instagram. There's Facebook, and we do some things on YouTube too. But, you know, primarily X and Instagram are the avenues that we'll give you some feedback on. So, hey, let us know. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week with something. Are we going to do our Marvel villains? I don't know. It's been teased. It was supposed to happen. It's been teased. Is it going to happen? We'll see. Tune in next week.